and welcome to Key to IP, the show that features intellectual property experts and takes a deep dive into intangible assets and innovations, featuring discussions on recent news surrounding IP. I'm your host, Tracy Gladden, and today we're going to talk about who is the intellectual property manager of the future with two key players at Denemeyer Consulting, Dr. Cornelia Poisa and Alexander Gagnus. Welcome to both of you, and thank you for joining the podcast.
Hello.
Hello, Alexander. We'll start with you. You have a wealth of international experience in the management of IP. What are some of the projects that you specialize in?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Tracy. I'm really happy to join you from my, at least currently, sunny home base in Munich. And before having started at Denemeyer 2 years ago, I spent 10 years chasing product pirates and counterfeiters in a German brand protection consultancy. And then having done that for such a long time, I decided to focus more on the creative and fun parts of IP work. And that's exactly what I do now at Denemeyer Consulting. I develop IP strategies for startups and scale-ups. I evaluate IP portfolios of all sizes and support investors and joint venture partners with IP due diligence and also risk analyses. That's what I do.
We're so happy to have you on the podcast today. Joining us also is Dr. Cornelia Poisa. And Cornelia, you recently published a white paper on who is the IP manager of the future. And in your experience, how have you seen the array of roles an IP manager needs to assume change and broaden over time?
Hello, and thank you for having me too. I'm just wondering at the moment where Alex is sitting because I'm in Munich as well, and it's rather gray where I am. But to come to your question, yes, I did write a white paper. It came out of the study, The Future of IP. And now we work with white papers to explore some of the themes that came up in a bit more detail. And what our panelists told us throughout is that as IP is becoming more important for organizations and for governments as well, so does the work of the IP manager become more important and moves from the end of the hallway to the center of the organization. And that means that the tasks that they have to fulfill change or have changed over time. And I try in this white paper to parse that into the different languages that our ideal IP manager needs to be able to at least understand, if not to speak as well as possible. And don't get me wrong here. Obviously, IP managers will always be IP managers. So the two central languages that they deal with or that they have to be proficient in is A, the language of the attorney, which quite a few of us would tend to call legalese. So if you work in IP, if you work with any sort of IP right, you need to understand the processes and legal procedures that surround them. And particularly in the case of patents, you also need to be able to understand the language in which patents are written so that you can understand them and communicate in your organization what is going on with these patents. It also entails a legal mind, a tactical mind, to know what to do when and what is possible and not in the legal sphere to get your innovations protected as comprehensively as possible. And the other one, the second language, is, of course, when you talk about innovation, the language of what I call science and technology, particularly with technical IP rights like patents or utility models. You will have to be able to understand what the people in research and development are actually doing, what they're working with. It also means that you can, by understanding and communicating with those people at eyesight, or from eye to eye, I should say, you are able to build trust so that the IP person, and very often they are referred to the IP person, they are the naysayers, the foot draggers that say, oh no, this is not possible. This is already out there. If you're able to communicate in the language of those R&D people in the company, generally in the organization, you're able to make yourself understood better and you're able to make people, first of all, understand what you're trying to convey to them, but also you build trust over time because you can make yourself heard and you're being taken serious and not just that guy from over there in the broom cupboard with the patents that always says, no, you can't do that. You can actually make people understand. And I think those are still the two languages that the IP manager has to be proficient in to be able to work in IP.
Cornelia, that is a very valid point. You raised the naysayer from my practical experience. And this is fully understandably, inventors are always very keen and they are excited about their inventions. They think always, oh, that's the next big, best thing and that's the best idea in the world. But very often IP managers and consultants, they need to be the bad guys and very critical. But you also need to be very diplomatic about that. So, and even in virtual meetings, you can literally feel hearts breaking and hear the tumbleweeds rolling when you ask the question, okay, sounds good. But have you ever thought about why no one had the idea before you? And it's really important to be quite diplomatic about that. And as I put it just now, that might not be the most diplomatic way, but yeah, try to be nice about rejecting.
And to be able to explain why you have to reject something, because the IP manager is not the person that wants to drag their feet. It is literally that they have to, because they also, and we'll come to that in a moment, they also have to be able to evaluate risk from a legal perspective or sometimes from the economic perspective. If there's already 10 patents, 100 patents out there that cover your brilliant idea, and there's a cognitive bias with inventors, everyone thinks their own idea is the best. That is a very human thing. But if you can explain to them in their language why things don't work, why you have to drag your feet at this particular point in time, that can help them understand and seek your advice in return when they have the next best idea.
So in the white paper, Cornelia, you go into detail about how the IP manager needs to speak different languages and not just the literal translation of languages. It's really important in an IP manager role for them to understand the language of the attorney and the language of science and technology. That's basically the traditional IP manager role. But the IP manager ideally then expands their languages to include business, particularly finance and also data languages. So Alex, can you offer some insight into the language of business?
Yeah, sure. Cornelia already touched that briefly in her introduction. And yeah, I'm sure that by now nobody can neglect anymore that we have been and still are facing major changes in the business environment in the last decades towards a knowledge, and if not to say even an IP economy. So even in the most traditional industry, IP found its way into the boardroom, and that also implies that IP managers need to learn the business language because that's what the C-level understands and what the C-level wants to hear. In the boardroom, it's about strategy, value, profit, losses, not about claims, CPC classes, filing routes, etc., etc. So an IP manager really needs to communicate how IP can contribute to a company's success and how IP can help achieving the corporate strategy. If necessary, the IP guys even need to speak finance language. That's where, for example, IP valuation comes into play. Putting a price tag on the IP portfolio makes it more tangible for those that have to focus on the numbers. And it's more and more asked from IP managers to find ways to make IP an active asset contributing to corporate success instead of being a passive and defensive risk reduction tool. And if an IP manager can achieve that, that legitimizes the IP function and thereby also the IP manager.
And then this, right, is where tools come in, such as IP management systems.
That's correct. Because the thing here is with the different languages that the IP manager has to master and the different audiences they have to speak to, they will spend a lot of their time communicating. And in the white paper, I call this the consummate communicator. But they still have to do their work and they still have to do the actual IP work. And here we go back into this, I don't want to call it purely administrative, but into the day-to-day work. And if you can do that in an efficient way, And if you can design your IP work efficiently and effectively, that is where tools can help you to bring that horsepower onto the tarmac. Because if you have efficient and smooth workflows supported by an IP management system, for example, you can free up time and you can free up capabilities to do all that talking around and all that communicating around. But I think it is more than just being able to work a system. And it's not only IP management systems, and I'll come back to those in a second. There's also the wealth of data that needs to be processed. You have, if you want to support R&D through IP and through IP knowledge, IP intelligence, then you need the tools to find and categorize this data and to draw conclusions from it and to formulate a strategic direction, as Alex just said. So being able not only to use tools to their fullest effect, but also to be able, and I think this is the crucial point, to be able to judge what tools can help you with that and what might be, dare I say, a waste of money, back to the tangible value here. So not every IP management system will fit every need. Not every analytics tool will answer every question. It depends on the industry that you're in. It depends very much on the questions that you're asking. It also depends on the type of organization that you're in. Because if you are a small company, and Alex works with startups, you don't need the most massive, most sophisticated systems and programs in place, because you might only have a handful of IPRs to manage. So you need to make qualified judgments. And that is what I call the language of tools. It's understanding the tools, being able to speak to them and get them to give you the answers that you want from them and the outcomes. So it is A, being able to choose the right tools and integrate them into your day-to-day work, and then being able to utilize those tools to their fullest extent.
And I think that is something where many companies, nevertheless, it's a startup or a large corporation, where they often struggle, because they get all those nice graphs and tables and things like that out of their IP analytics tools, but they don't know to the full extent what they can do with it now and what it tells them. And it's really also, in some cases, it's really dangerous, because when you only slightly change the query or the displayed data and the data sets and data rules, then you get a completely different message. If we talk about first filings or first publications, for example, and so that there are really a lot of pitfalls. And I think that is really a point where many companies struggle and where they need help beyond just some tool like delivering nice graphs without a lot of interpretation and help on them.
Absolutely. And I think that sometimes even goes further than that. If you do the same query a week apart, your results might change, because IP is live. Things get published, things get applied for. Things change. And that brings me back to the language of the attorney. If you don't know how the life cycle of an IP right works, you won't be able to interpret the data. So you need to understand the data, you need to understand IP, and you need to understand your tools and their limitations.
Okay, so let's move into some examples about communicating. This is the part of the podcast where we get into a fun question. So I have a question for both of you. How should an IP manager communicate?
Be nice. Always be nice in all directions. Because as an IP manager, usually you depend on every counterpart you work with to do your work and to do it good. You depend on the inventors, and you have to be nice to them so they continue giving you their inventions and putting their heart and everything and their soul in it. You also need to be nice to the external counsel you might work with or the service provider, because they provide you with their knowledge and they're also hopefully also their passion when working for you. But of course, you also have to be very nice. And I think, but that really comes naturally because they pay you, they pay your wage. You also have to be nice to the C-level, of course, to legitimate yourself and to be really, to stay on your seat, so to say.
I think we need to keep in mind here that communication is a two-way thing. I think one of the things that the IP manager needs to really, really get their head around is the listening part. And that brings me back to the different sorts of communications. I totally concur with Alex that you should be nice, but your communication also needs to be appropriate. And that means that you need to understand what your respective audience needs from you. So the outside counsel might need very precise legalese. Your C-level might need numbers and facts and proof of IP's contribution to the company results. If you talk to the nerds in the R&D department, you might need a totally different language. And there is this understanding and listening and then tailoring your outward communication to what other people need to hear. And then be nice, of course. And also be constant. Constantly communicate. It's not only about broadcasting IP out there. Hello, here we are. We are great. You all need us. It is about, through listening and understanding, bringing out or formulating messages that will be understood and over time, and in the best case, be internalized, so that people around the organization, whether within or out with the organization, understand the centrality of IP. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of persuasion, and a lot of conviction, I believe. So that is where I see the last two bits that the IP manager has to bring to the table, apart from all those different people. It's the language, what I call the language of persuasion, that is convincing people that IP is important, IP is pretty central at all levels of the organization. You need to tailor those messages to whoever is listening. And you also have to be able to translate between your different audiences. That's the last one, this ability to translate between the languages. So if the R&D department comes up with an idea that you, with your understanding of IP, think, there might be a chance in that. That is actually a pretty cool thing. Now you have to get the budget and you have to get to the CFO and have that R&D project budgeted. So you have to translate from the slightly nerdy scientific language towards or into the legalese and see if it's possible, and then translate it up to the C-level to get the budget for it and to bring it forward. You are speaking for and with everyone. And as I said before, I call it the consummate communicator. And that is something that will be very, very central. And that is what our panelists, our interview partners, all pointed out. Although I have to say that one legal counsel in a large company in South Africa said, yeah, that's a really good idea, but we attorneys can't even communicate with each other. That's a tall task you're putting up here. So we had a good laugh about that. And I'm very, very aware that not everything is ideal here. We're moving towards it. We're pointing out where the challenges are. And we see those challenges being faced by our clients, by our partners, every single day. We're not there yet. We're talking about an idealized IP manager. But we need to figure out and parse really what then is needed.
So really, you really have to be able to give good work, but also communicate it. So there's subtle interpretations of different languages you write about in your white paper.
Yeah, it's definitely doing good things and talking about them. So you will never be the great IP manager if you don't understand IP properly. I firmly believe that You have to do very solid, robust work, because that is something that you can then show off. And I've had IP departments who came up with, okay, we have enough applications. Let's do a patent of the month and point out how great we are and how this translates. And let's have everyone, or let's create the buy-in from everyone by just showcasing what we can do. But obviously, there needs to be something to showcase.
Interesting. And Alex, can you talk a little bit about like the cultural aspect of fostering innovation and how the IP manager of the future needs to build a culture around IP?
I think that's basically what Cornelia was talking about. I mean, like pointing out really the importance of IP in every part of the business, integrating an IP thinking in the whole value chain, so to say. Pointing out to the R&D guys, hey, what you are doing is really, really important to us. Share your ideas with us. Let's have an open dialogue on what could be the next best thing. We are here to help you also to get your ideas on the paper and on the shelf, so to say. But also use your IP knowledge and your bragging, so to say, talking about the stuff. Use it for your marketing externally. Tell the marketing guys, hey, we are doing great IP work here. We have a strong brand. We are doing a lot of good stuff with our IP. Talk about it also externally. Talk to your business development guys and to the guys who are really on sales and talking to the customers. Ask them to bring the customers' ideas in. And then again, align with R&D to have the customer's voice really in the R&D section also. And try to think of yourself being the innovation hub and idea hub within the company. And not just being like the nerdy guy sitting in some kind of a dark office and having the files and folders with patent certificates, but really be bold and convince everybody about IP's contribution to the corporate success.
So really the key to the future IP manager is all about communication and all about speaking the different languages of IP within an organization. Fabulous. Thank you so much, Cornelia and Alex, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. It was my pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Thank you very much for having us. And while we were talking, actually, there are indeed clouds coming up. Cornelia, have you sent the bad weather here to the south?
Am I in the west of you?
For our listeners today, you can find the language resource guide that was discussed during this podcast at go.denemeyer.com/key2IP. There you can learn about our guests today and find out more about our upcoming podcast topics. Thank you.